How you guys doing? Man, oh man, we got an exciting interview coming up. We got the 2020 election next year. We got a race of candidates that are battling against each other. There's been a few debates already, and so I'm super excited to get into this discussion today with Troy. How's it going? My name is Seth. I'm your host for Apollineering, and welcome back to the show if you guys have tuned in before. If not, welcome to the show if this is your first time. So we're glad to have you. I want to give a plug in here for the Daily Renegade. As many of you know, Josh Peck has decided to create a platform for Christian fringe shows, topics, people, because YouTube is cracking down on their censoring. They're really starting to get serious about it. And if you guys have been keeping up with us, you know that our channel was recently demonetized for who knows what. The unfortunate thing is that they're never specific about it. So it's really frustrating because, we want to conform to the guidelines as best we can, but at the same time, we want to share truth and we want to get the truth out there. And sometimes that the truth is not everyone likes the truth. So that being said, if you guys are interested in this kind of stuff, you're going to notice about halfway through this video that I'm going to cut the video and the audio. And if you want the full interview, you're going to have to become a member. And becoming a member of the Daily Renegade is really cheap. It's 10 bucks a month or 100 bucks a year, but you get a lot of content. There's soon to be 12 shows on the Daily Renegade with people like Ryan Peterson, with Lauren and Jason with the Z Files. You get Josh Peck's Daily Peck Report. You get Christina's new show that she's doing on Friday nights. You get Peck Underground Church. And man, there's just more joining month by month. And so it's really turning into a cool platform and it's censor free. So we can talk about anything and not have to worry about that for now until they start shutting down websites. So if you guys are interested in that, we're also going to be starting to sell merchandise here pretty soon. So it's going to be cool. I'm really excited for the future. So that being said, our topic today, like I just said, we're going to be talking about Trump and the future of America. Troy's written some books on it, and I'm excited to talk to him about his books. But before we do, I kind of want to give his bio, and then I want to hear from him about what motivated him to start writing these books. So Troy Anderson is a Pulitzer Prize nominated investigative journalist, best-selling Faith Words Hatchet author, former executive editor of Charisma Magazine and Charisma Media, reporter at the Los Angeles Daily News, and a frequent guest on numerous television and radio programs. He's co-author of the number one bestsellers, The Babylon Code, Solving the Bible's Greatest End Times Mystery, which was released in October 2015, and Trumpocalypse, The End Times President, A Battle Against the Globalist Elite, and The Countdown to Armageddon, which was released in January 2018. So Troy, how's it going today, man?
Oh, it's great. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be talking to you. I was telling you before we got on, before we started recording, that I've been following you for a while now, since about 2013, actually. And so it's been really cool to read your books and read your articles and Charisma and all that kind of stuff. So, but today I want to start a little bit differently than I think you've started other interview shows, and that is, I want you to share your testimony with us and talk about how you came to know Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, and then how that saving grace has motivated you and to write the material that you're writing.
Okay, well, I grew up in a small town in Oregon. My dad owned a fish cannery, and when I was 11 years old, all these Jesus people from Southern California invaded our hometown in their VW vans, bunch of hippies. And one of them was a guy named Richard Wheeler. He'd actually trained under Hal Lindsey, who wrote the late great Planet Earth. He was at a seminary called the UCLA Light and Powerhouse Seminary back in the late 60s and early 70s. So he'd read the book and he'd trained under Hal Lindsey. And I met him at a restaurant in Charleston with my mom, and he invited me to attend the youth group. And not too long after that, he gave me a copy of The Late Great Planet Earth. So I was like 11 years old, and I read this book in two days, sitting on a sandy bluff overlooking the 101 at sunset, and it just blew my mind. I was just like, my God, because back then people were wearing, like, Jesus is coming t-shirts, And, you know, not too long after that, I started wearing sandals and a hippie robe and a headband and had long hair and had my big furry Bible. And I go to school and I'd hold Bible studies and I'd tell everybody that Jesus was coming back. And they all thought I was crazy. so that was sort of the beginning of the journey there.
Oh, good. Good. So, how did, were you already a Christian at that point? I mean, you grew up in a house that preached Jesus and you kind of knew who he was. Did you make your faith your own at that point? Because I know for me in particular, like I grew up in a Christian household and, you know, I grew up hearing about Jesus and stuff, but I didn't really make, you know, that faith my own thing until I was into college and could kind of understand a little bit more about what was going on. Did you not experience that? Or, I mean, especially going, you know, through the 60s and stuff like that, it must have been a little bit difficult to be a Christian during that time.
Yeah. So my mom, when I was little, she took me to a community college or a community church in Port Orford. And so I just had like vague memories, like 5 or 6 years old, she'd take me to a church every once in a while and go to Sunday school. So the thing I remember most is like these pictures of Noah's Ark and Adam and Eve and these like amazing like color books. And so that always, you know, that image always sort of struck in my mind. But then, you know, my parents didn't go to church. My dad, you know, he liked to watch the 700 Club. He liked to watch Billy Graham on TV, Jim Baker, Jimmy Swaggart, and I think there's some other like televangelists that he liked. So he'd watch them on TV, but he would never go to church. And so when Richard and these other Jesus people showed up in our town, it was sort of mind blowing because this is a very conservative logging, fishing, farming kind of town. And they came in and things were, you know, changed. This is like the late 70s. And so I was just, you know, after reading that book, and then Richard spent, you know, a few years sort of teaching me about Bible prophecy and what he believed was going to happen. So that had a gigantic impact on my life. So I gave my heart, you know, my life to the Lord when I was 11. And then was, you know, very fervent Christian for, you know, throughout the, you know, junior high and high school. And then towards the end of high school, one of the youth leaders in our youth group, he ran off with the girl that I liked. And I was upset about it and angry at God. And so I ended up falling away from the time I was about 17, 18, all the way up until 9/11, like, you know, 12 years later. So it was like a period of time in which I, you know, fallen away from the faith. But I never stopped believing. I just, you know, was upset about that. Plus, the whole thing of Hal Lindsey's, was it the 88 Reasons Why Jesus is going to Come Back in 1988, Then that didn't happen. That was sort of disillusioning. And so there was a period of time where I, you know, I fell away and, you know, got interested in, you know, New Age kind of stuff and, you know, Edgar Cayce and, you know, Native American beliefs and just sort of a period of exploration for many years when I went to college and you know, years after I was a newspaper reporter.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. I didn't know that you kind of got into the New Age stuff. What, how did that shape your return to Christ? And when did you decide, like, hey, I need to make my, you know, my life, my dedication to Christ, like everything that I'm about, like to carry my cross daily, if you will. How did you know, chasing the New Age and chasing some of these other spiritual beliefs kind of lend towards, you know, finding truth in Jesus and finding him as your savior?
Well, what happened? So, you know, by the time 2001 rolled around, I was a reporter at the LA Daily News. And after 9/11 happened, I mean, I remember, you know, that morning I woke up and I was about to go to downtown LA to, you know, my job. I covered county government. And I, you know, my wife said, "Troy, come here and, you know, check this out." And this, you know, the first plane had like hit one of the Twin Towers. And we're just like sort of watching this happen. And then the second plane hits. And I go, my God, what's going on here? You know, it seems like we're under attack. And then, you know, my editor called me and says, "Troy, get to downtown LA. All these people are fleeing the skyscrapers downtown. Get down there and report on all this." So I went down there, you know, and covered the whole thing. And it just sort of struck me after that whole thing happened that, you know, is this the beginning of these events, you know, I learned about when I was a kid, this Bible prophecy and all these things that Hal Lindsey wrote about and other books I read over the years, you know, what my youth pastor told me. So that was sort of like, after that is when I rededicated my life to the Lord and began this, you know, this journey back to the Lord.
Well, that's interesting that the Lord can use such a tragic event, you know, to really call call people back. And I think that's all that's, you know, described throughout the entire Bible. I mean, the whole book of Judges, right? I mean, these people fell into sin, and then God would use this horrible thing that would happen to them to kind of bring them back. So that's incredible to me. I just have to ask, because 2001 seems like a big event, you know, not only in everyone's life, but in particularly yours, what are your thoughts? I mean, you're an investigative journalist. Have you investigated 9/11 at all, and the cause of the collapse of the buildings or the conspiracies behind it? What is your opinion on that?
You know, I read some of the books about that, and there is a big question mark about what, you know, really happened there. I haven't, you know, done a real extensive investigation into that whole thing, but I've read some of the, you know, different things, and it, you know, is it possible that that was some kind of staged event? I mean, we don't know for sure, but it's a question I've asked myself, and apparently a lot of people have. You know, I interviewed Jim Mars for the Babylon Code and Trumpocalypse. He's a New York Times bestselling author, wrote Rule by Secrecy, which is a book that had quite an impact on me. I read that in, I think, the year 2000, where he sort of lays out, you know, these powerful behind-the-scenes forces, secret societies and these foundations and these think tanks and these very powerful, wealthy families. And I think he actually wrote a book on 9/11 and what he believed. I didn't read that full book. But when I interviewed him, you know, we talked about this briefly, and he sort of introduced me to these ideas that everything we see in politics is not the, you know, the full spectrum of what's really going on. There's like I said, there's these secret societies, very powerful families, and behind all that is this, you know, this gigantic spiritual battle between, you know, forces of good and evil that's going on. So I think Tom Horn told me a few years ago when he endorsed the Babylon Code, he said there's far more in heaven on earth, Horatio, than you know, sort of meets the eye. There's a lot more going on than just what we see on the surface in the media and politics.
I could agree with you more. And that's a great, I think, segue into kind of what we are going to be talking about today, our main focus for today. And so, you know, like I said in the intro, the 2020 election is obviously next year. And, you know, Trump winning back in 2016 was just, for me, it was mind-blowing. Like, I couldn't even comprehend how he won, because, I mean, everything was leading up to, like, Hillary's the person. Hillary's gonna, like, win. Like, all the polls, you know, every media outlet was saying that. Even Alex Jones and InfoWars, I think they were leaning towards that, like, there's no way Trump's gonna win, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, it didn't make any sense. And so, I guess the first question that I want to ask you, and I don't know if you go into this in Trumpocalypse, but how did that happen? What was it, just the realization of American people that we need a different type of president in 2016, or what? How did that happen? Like, what is your opinion on that? What's your analysis of that?
I think a very unusual thing happened in American politics and global politics in 2016. So, you know, our first book was The Babylon Code. It's essentially an expose of globalism. So this term, people started to hear about this in recent years. What is globalism? And essentially, it's sort of this utopian belief that we can bring the world together, we can form all these international structures, international laws, and we can, you know, create some kind of utopian kind of society. It's, you know, it's tied in with, you know, climate change. We need to bring the world together to address climate change, get rid of nuclear bombs, bring peace, address poverty. It seems like all these great things. So, but you know, the reality of it is far different than the way it's portrayed. So in the Babylon Codes, it's an exploration of you know, an expose of globalism and who these people are, what they really want. And it's also an exploration of mystery Babylon in the book of Revelation. So you start out, you know, in Genesis with the story of the Tower of Babel and Nimrod. He creates this gigantic tower and these cities. And he essentially creates the first world government and economic system and a cult-based religious system. And then God sees what humanity's done. You know, after the flood, he had told humanity to scatter throughout the world and essentially form nation states, because he knew that would serve as a good check and balance on the innate, our inbuilt weakness to want to, you know, have all the power and all the wealth and the corruption that follows from that. So Nimrod tried to create this world system. Essentially, Satan tried to create this world system, and then God confounded it and you know, spread humanity throughout the world. And then you know, Babylon plays a central role in the books of the prophets. And then reemerges in Revelation as this great biblical mystery Babylon. So our first book explored, you know, what is mystery Babylon, and then, you know, expose of these globalists. So then Trump ran on a campaign of Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. And he's the first president that I'm aware of that ever campaigned against the globalists. I mean, essentially the globalists are, you know, many of them are very wealthy, very powerful, very influential people. And so he was challenging this satanic world power system that has emerged and grown far more powerful in the last several decades than it ever was before. And so he's challenging it. And then it's right before, you know, the presidential election 2016, he had Brexit in Great Britain. And so the people are sort of waiting, like this global awakening has occurred. Like you said, you watched Alex Jones and you watched these different shows. I mean, all like what you're doing, what I'm doing, what Alex Jones is doing, what many people are doing is raising the awareness, trying to educate the public as to what's really happening behind the scenes here. And of course, how this fits in the Bible prophecy. So there's this global awakening that's occurred. When I wrote the Babylon Code, we cited a poll, I think it was from the University of Chicago, found that 51% of Americans believe a so-called secret cabal actually runs the world from behind the scenes. And then after, you know, Trump got elected, I saw a poll that, you know, 75% of Americans now believe that there is a deep state, and this deep state, you know, has a gigantic impact on our political system. So that there's this global consciousness raising that's going on, and awareness among a large segment of the public that's becoming aware of this. And so I think that played a big role in Trump getting elected. And then I also think that, you know, God probably intervened to help him become president.
Yeah, and I would agree with your assessment. And there's so many questions that just come out of that statement what you just said. My first question in response to that is, you know, you said that, you know, these globalist elites are, you know, the wealthy, the powerful, you know, these family lineages, if you will. Doesn't Trump come from that same, you know, background? So what's different about him? Why is he against this? You know, there's videos of him back in the 90s that I've watched where he's promoting, you know, democratic people who are pro-globalism. So in your opinion, what happened? Did he also have an awakening where he just realized what was going on and needed to change, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, we believe that he's learned a lot of things we're talking about now. We believe that, you know, through different, you know, either through media channels or through books, maybe he's read different things like that. He's learned a certain amount of this information. He's become concerned about, you know, what's going to happen to America if we allow these people to, you know, gain full control, essentially. You know, so I believe that's played a role. I know some ministers that say that they led him to the Lord either shortly before and shortly after the election. So he's sort of, you know, possibly a sort of baby Christian in that sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back and look at his life, I mean, he's lived the life of like a billionaire playboy, you know. I mean, and that's one of the big problems that, you know, many Christians have with President Trump is, you know, all this history. And of course, you know, the media plays it up and tries to make it sound worse than it is, but you know, a lot of this stuff is true, and he says all kinds of, you know, off the wall things sometimes that just sort of make you cringe, right? You know, he's the president of the United States, and here he's saying these, you know, I mean, I believe there's some kind of there's a part of your brain that's sort of a filter, and as you get for some people when you get older, you start to lose that filter. Well, he's probably lost that filter, you know, and so yeah, that's part of what we're seeing happening here probably. But I think what it is that, you know, because he's a billionaire and because he's, you know, been a businessman, he has a skill set that was necessary to help, you know, restore America's economy. And he's also very courageous. We needed a courageous president for this country because there are many very powerful you know, evil entities out there would like to do us in. And so we need somebody to stand up for our country and somebody who believes in America. And so I think in that sense, God, you know, if God did play a role in this election, I mean, maybe Trump was like the only person that could really pull off not only winning the election, but then, you know, accomplishing what he's accomplished so far. I think that's he's the guy that had the right skill set, and then the others probably couldn't accomplish what he's accomplished so far.
Yeah. What is the most effective, I guess, in terms as it relates to either Bible prophecy or pro-Americanism and nationalism, what do you think is the most effective action that President Trump has taken for America?
I think the biggest thing that he's done, I mean, there's some people that, like, you know, they've compiled these lists of all these different things he's done. A lot of it we haven't heard about in the media. But I think the number one thing that he's done is I believe God has put him there to sort of hold off the New World Order. You know, we're getting this extra time. I mean, if it wasn't for him there, I interviewed a two-star general here 2.5 weeks ago, and he goes, people in America have no idea how much danger we're in. He said, if Hillary Clinton had been elected president, we would be on the fast track to a world government right now. And he said, you know, 2020 is coming up. If Trump loses, you know, they're not going to be nice about it this time. I mean, the gloves are off now. And you know, we're seeing the, you know, first signs of persecution of Christians in America now, and all the laws being changed, everything's being set up now with the power that they still have, you know, to sort of set it up so that they can begin real persecution of Christians and clamp down on, you know, like you see with the censorship of the you know, Christian and conservative beliefs. This is all part of the, you know, they're going to do everything they possibly can to win in 2020, because they know that Trump is holding back this this plan they've had and you know, been working on for decades, if not centuries, to create this world system the Bible predicts is going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess by holding off, do you mean bringing jobs back to America instead of, you know, going overseas, and bringing, you know, the steel plants back to Pittsburgh area and all those types of things, and kind of just making decisions that are pro-American, right? That's kind of what you mean by holding off the New World Order.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, you know, jobs and prosperity is a good thing for America, because it helps America remain strong. But you know, I think it's much deeper than that. You know, I believe that God has given us extra time to fulfill the Great Commission. When the Pilgrims and the Puritans came to America in the early 1600s, they dedicated in the Mayflower Compact, they dedicated America to God and for the advancement of the Christian faith. And so in some of our, you know, early, you know, universities, Yale, Princeton and Harvard started out as seminaries for preachers, essentially, to train them in you know, as a seminary. And, you know, there was at one point they wanted to adopt Hebrew as the American language. And so, wow. or at least one of the languages that would be studied, you know, these early, you know, so America was founded on the idea that we're going to advance the Christian faith. And God has used America in a gigantic way over the last, you know, four centuries to spread the gospel around the world. You know, we still, you know, contribute the most money and have the most missionaries, and through all the media, Christian media that we have now, you know, America's played a gigantic role in spreading the gospel. We've gone from, you know, several hundred million Christians, you know, a few centuries ago, to there's, you know, roughly somewhere between, you know, 2 to 2.5 billion, if you include Catholics in the calculation now. So, you know, Jesus told us that the gospel would be preached to all the world, and then the end would come. So that's just, you know, God, you know, God loves us very much. You know, He doesn't want to bring judgment upon us, but, you know, as you know, God is righteous, and so there will be judgment at some point. But so I believe right now we're getting extra time to fulfill the Great Commission. So when I say that, you know, God, you know, I believe God raised up President Trump to hold off the New World Order, He's essentially given us extra time to do what we're supposed to do, which is, you know, our primary job is to spread the gospel.
And with that, I guess the implication of that is that the New World Order is anti-gospel, right? So if, I guess if Trump has been placed here to allow us and give us time to spread the gospel, then I guess the whole mission of the New World Order is to stop the spread of the gospel. Would you agree with that?
So the term New World Order is a very interesting term, and I did a bunch of research on this in the Babylon Code. One of my ancestors is Friedrich von Schiller. He's the poet and playwright. He wrote the poem Ode to Joy that Beethoven set to music in the Ninth Symphony back in the late 1700s. And at the time, almost all his friends were members of the Bavarian Illuminati, including Goethe. And it's unclear whether he actually joined or not. But, you know, at one point, his first play came out, I think, in the 1780s. It's called The Robbers. It was a gigantic sensation. And it sort of catapulted him to fame throughout Europe. But then he didn't have a good play for a couple of years. He went into debt because he overextended himself. And a member of the Bavarian Illuminati befriended him. They paid off his debts. It became a place to live. And so he wrote the poem Ode to Joy, which is about the brotherhood of man. And you know, not too long, right around that time, there was a messenger for Adam Weishaupt, who's the founder of the Illuminati. Yep. He was, as the story goes, he was sent to transport these documents to somebody else. Gets hit by lightning, and they discovered this set of documents sewed in his jacket, and in there it talks about the New World Order through revolution, how the Illuminati wants to, overthrow the monarchies of Europe and infiltrate the religious establishment and ultimately overthrow Christianity, and so the powers that be in the 1800s and or late 1700s in Germany were shocked. They were stunned by what they had discovered here, because this involved princes and the elite and the literati and very wealthy members of Germany, and so they banned the Illuminati, but not too long after that the French Revolution happened. And I've read, I've talked to different Schiller scholars and read books, and they said that Schiller's writings helped inspire the French Revolution, the guillotines and tens of thousands of people with their heads chopped off. And so after this, he was aghast. He was very saddened that, his writings had helped contribute to this. And as many people believe, Illuminati was behind the French Revolution, sort of this first, socialist sort of communist revolution, which we're seeing sort of happening, the early stages of it going on here in America today, once again. But you also had, the communist revolutions in Russia and China over the last century, of course, led to, tens of millions of deaths. So Schiller was shocked by this, and sort of toward the end of his life, he was writing a play to expose the plans of the Illuminati, and then he died mysteriously, and there was widespread rumors that he was poisoned. And when I was a little kid, my grandma would tell me all these stories, and she encouraged me to follow in his footsteps and become a writer. So that's part of the story on the New World Order, where that term came from. And of course, over the last two centuries, there's all kinds of world leaders that have used this term. We need to create a New World Order. Hitler talked about creating a New World Order. George Bush Sr. talked about creating a New World Order. I mean, I think I list them all in the Babylon Code, or many of them. It's sort of like a who's who of major political figures over the last, two centuries have been talking about this New World Order. So this thing has been planned for a long time. They have a very long-term plan. They actually call it the plan. And we talk about that, and I think in chapter 6 or 7 of Trumpocalypse, we call it the Illuminati's, quote, plan, and go into detail on that.
That's great. I have a question for you, but before we do, I'm going to stop our audio and video for YouTube and for non-members. So if you guys want this full video, we're going to be talking. The question that I have is pertaining to secret societies and their plan, and how Trump has, why he was, other than God's intervention, why he was allowed to thwart that plan. So if you want to become a member, go to the description in the link below, and you can find that. So for non-members, we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Okay, members, Daily Renegade, how you guys doing? We've been interviewing Troy Anderson. We're talking Trump. We're talking politics. We're talking secret societies. And Troy was just talking about what the term New World Order means and kind of where it came from. And so my question is to you, Troy, how You know, if this plan has been established for so long and it's been in the works for so long, what other than God's intervention, how is it thwarted? Is it because, you know, the awareness that's and the awakening, I guess, that's happening throughout the world and the public isn't reacting how they kind of want them to react, or what's your analysis of that?
Yeah, so as we lay out in the Babylon Code and Tripocalypse, the elite have been working on this plan for a long time, and at different times throughout history, we believe the devil tried to bring this global system online. You know, you first had it with ancient Babylon, you had it with Egypt, Roman Empire, Nazi Germany. There's been various attempts by Satan to bring this world system, this utopian or dystopian world system that he envisions, as a predominant power structure on Earth. And he's been, close to being successful. I mean, imagine if Nazi Germany had taken over the planet back in the 1940s, it'd be a nightmare. And that was a socialist revolution, or, socialist policies that Hitler presided over. It was called National Socialist. And now we're watching polls show that, over 50% of young people favor socialism and communism over capitalism. So we're watching a repeat of this happening. But to get to your question, we believe this is a very long-term plan. And part of the plan is they want us to willingly embrace all this. They don't want a gigantic global revolution, because, we're talking about a relatively small minority of people who are, wealthy. Many are members of occult secret societies, and it's a relatively very small percentage of people. So there's 8 billion people on the planet. So you can't have, people becoming completely aware of what's happening and in instituting some kind of, essentially what will ultimately probably become some kind of totalitarian system, unless you get somehow people to go along with it. Otherwise, they'll just simply, overthrow whoever starts all this. So there's different stages to this plan. One of them is to amass just an incredible amount of wealth in order to pull this off, and they've certainly done that. I think we cite some polls in the books that talk about, I think it's like 1% of the world's richest people now own 99% of the wealth. So there's literally trillions in the hands of the wealthiest people on this planet, and so that gives them enormous political power. Interviewed a professor at Princeton, I think it's Martin Guilens. He decided he was going to study this. How much power do the elite have compared to everybody else? And so he thought when he went into the study, he'd find that they have more power, but he didn't think it'd be an all-encompassing kind of power. But what he actually found is that because of lobbyists, campaign contributions, and just all the sort of the structures the elite use to control our political system, they almost have all the power now politically. So that's why you see all these politicians sort of doing whatever they're being told by their puppet masters sort of behind the scenes, because there's so much money involved. So that's one aspect of it. And then there was actually what's amazing is that the plan is actually outlined on a website called Lucius Trust, which has consultative status with the United Nations.
Right.
And then this is a group that was an occult group with
Alice Bailey.
Yeah, Alice Bailey. And so she actually wrote some books. I think it's called The Hierarchy. There's a whole bunch of books sort of, online at Lucius Trust. And she lays out all the details of what the plan is. And I interviewed Constance Kumby, who wrote a book back in the early 80s, sort of outlines how the New Age movement ties in with the Illuminati, and how that they're working through the United Nations. They've trained, the elite for generations now to sort of go along with the program. And so they've now installed, sort of agents of the New World Order, positions of power and influence in business and politics and the media, Hollywood, you name it, educational system. And so they sort of got their people, and many of them probably aren't even aware that, they're sort of part of this whole thing. But Alice Bailey, talked about, I think we cite this in Tripocalypse, but that by 2024 or so, they figured they would have the whole structure in place. And she wrote this back in the 40s. They have the whole structure in place so they could bring the New World Order, this world government, online. And interestingly enough, the United Nations released the United Nations 2030 Sustainable Development Plan. And so we think it's all sort of tied together. Over the next decade or so, they're planning to roll out this whole thing. And a lot of it's involved, you know, indoctrination of young people primarily. And so, that, you know, from the time they're born until end of college, you're essentially indoctrinated into, you know, all these sort of globalist kind of ideas, you know, global citizenship. They now have these big concerts in New York City and Berlin and other parts of the world called Global Citizen Festivals, where they bring in rock stars and celebrities. And they're trying to get us all think of ourselves as global citizens instead of being, you know, citizens of America or France or Germany. So. We believe the plan is to get us to all sort of go along with it. They're using social media. They're using all kinds of mind control and propaganda techniques. Literally, tens of billions of dollars are being spent by think tanks and foundations, and money is plugged into media outlets. You know, there's all kinds of intelligence agencies that have people embedded in media outlets, you know, around the world to sort of control the flow of information. And, you know, it's pretty shocking when you dig into all this and find out what's really going on. But, you know, we have like, you know, COPUS notes. All our sources are from, you know, mainstream sources or academic or, you know, highly credible experts in all kinds of different fields. And so we've compiled all the best evidence in these two books to show that this is really happening. And that's what I felt was my calling after I met Paul McGuire, is to sort of help, you know, make this, bring all this information together, make it as credible as possible so that people could, you know, read this and then judge for themselves what's really happening here.
Yeah. And it's shocking to me that, like you were just saying, that you can pull secular sources. It's not like we're going to Christian researchers or anything. It's like Harvard professors and, you know, all these different survey groups that are collecting all of this information. And we just, you know, you just have to cite it. And it's just shocking to me that still people are so adamant that there's nothing secretive going on or sinister going on in our government or against us as a human race. I mean, it's not just American citizens they're affecting. They have a plan for the entire world. And so, you know, Chinese citizens, African citizens, you know, whatever country you're from, like it's going to involve you. And so it's just shocking to me that people are still so just turned off by it. But my question to you is, my next question, why are secret societies necessary? What is the point of them in the long-term plan? You know, we were talking about how like they just accumulate all this wealth and with that wealth comes power, because you're able to buy, you know, the companies and all this stuff that make decisions. So what is the purpose and point of these secret societies? I mean, I think you probably go into it in the Babylon Code, and I'm sure you discuss it a little bit in Trumpocalypse, because it's so prevalent in the higher ranks of American government. But what is the purpose? What's the point of them as it pertains to the plan for the New World Order?
Well, of course, if all this was out in the open and we all knew about it, it would be far more difficult for them to pull off this, you know, what they'd ultimately like to do. So secrecy has always, you know, been used by the elite and the corrupt, you know, in order to, you know, accomplish what they want to do, obtain more wealth, obtain more power, whatever it is they want. You know, the investigative reporters, you know, essentially our job is to dig in, find the secrets that people are trying to keep and then reveal those so that, you know, it can be fixed essentially. And so from the time of ancient Babylon, that's where the sort of all began. So, the Tower of Babel, was it some kind of interdimensional portal? Was there something more going on there? Was it, you know, astrology, ancient occult beliefs? And we believe that the Bible reveals that, you know, Nimrod and the people at that time, they contacted, you know, interdimensional beings, essentially, you know, fallen angels and demons who imparted all kinds of knowledge and esoteric information to them. You know, so that's sort of that's the origins of the Illuminati, origin of these secret societies, is all this occult information and supernatural kind of stuff that was imparted, you know, thousands of years ago back at the Tower of Babel. And so with that information, they have a completely different worldview than we have. They don't believe that, you know, they don't believe the Christian Bible, you know, the parts of it, but they believe that essentially Lucifer is going to be successful and the cult forces are going to win, and they have this very elaborate plan, you know, to be successful in all this. So they have a completely flipped, you know, worldview of what Christians have. And so, you know, these, you know, so all this information, this history and sort of secrets of civilization and economics and all kinds of different fields was passed down through secret societies over thousands of years. And it's a control structure so that the people at the top, the elite, you know, the pharaohs, the Caesars, the, you know, the rulers of these ancient kingdoms, they all had magicians and sorcerers and necromancers and wizards and that kind of thing that worked very closely with the rulers. And there's a reason for this. This stuff is real, and there is power in it. It's a corruption of the, you know, the universe that God has created. And so, these secrets have been passed down for, you know, thousands of years. And sorry,
don't worry.
Something fell there. Part of this whole plan is to use secrecy and to have all this secret knowledge that only the elite have, and a lot of it has to do with accumulating wealth, accumulating power, and so part of what's happening, it's almost like a spell has been cast upon the world, and I think in a sense it has, and that's what we believe part of Mystery Babylon is. So Revelation 17:18 talks about, you know, the Apostle John talked about Mystery Babylon and Babylon the Great, and it's just this great biblical mystery that scholars have puzzled over for 2,000 years, and I think a large part of this is it involves, you know, a cult. Like a spell that's been cast upon our culture. And so I think this helps explain why so many people are in denial. Even though we're watching all these prophecies unfold, and many of us have heard a lot about this, you know, throughout, you know, much of our lives, you know, the church is largely asleep at the wheel as this is all happening. And many people just don't want to, think about, you know, the kind of things that, you know, are coming down the line here at some point. So I think that's part of it. There's all kinds of propaganda and mind control going on, but also a cult, like a spell cast upon the church, cast upon the America, and cast upon the world to, I guess sort of keep us asleep as all this unfolds.
Yeah, and I think that's biblical because, you know, the Bible mentions that, you know, there's like a veil, like Satan has cast a veil over the eyes of the unbelieving, right? So it's almost like you're exactly right. It is exactly like a spell. It's meant to blind them to the truth. And that's why books like yours and shows like this one and people that are trying to get the truth out there, it's important that we kind of pay attention and listen. So if you're listening to this and this is new information to you, please start spreading the news and start sharing the truth that there is this stuff, because that kind of plays into where I want to go next. And that's kind of the future and what the future holds. So, like I said, we have the 2020 election coming up. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, is it possible for Trump to win again? I mean, and then kind of piggybacking off of that, you know, there's this awakening going about the globalism, about kind of just the secret societies. I mean, Freemason is almost an everyday term now. You know, I mean, they've just become so they've stepped into the spotlight. So you know, with that rise in globalism and with the 2020 election happening, how does all of this start to mold into prophecy and what the book of Revelation lays out? Because for me, I see, you know, there has to be this one world religion. There has to be this one world government that kind of just rules over the nation. But if there's a rise in globalism, how does that come to pass? So what is your analysis of the future? What's going to happen over the next few years? I mean, that's a big question, but if you had to pick a couple of topics and maybe even just focus in on the presidency and the election, what would you say?
Well, I say, first of all, we've read all these stories that supposedly the odds makers and different, analysts are saying that, you know, Trump's most likely going to win this election. But, you know, that very well could be part of the, you know, sort of the other side's deception. You know, the Democrats were convinced that Hillary Clinton was going to win in the last election. And then, you know, Trump shocked the world by becoming the president and winning the popular vote. And one of the good things about America, I was a reporter at the LA Daily News for many years, so I covered elections. And, many of the county registrars around the nation still have paper ballots. So unless you have electronic voting, much of America still has a, you know, a somewhat honest election system compared to many around the world. So, you know, your vote still does count. So it's very important to go, you know, to go vote, because it actually does count in America, and it's very important. So I think, you know, all these articles coming out saying that, you know, Trump's most likely going to win, that leads to a sense of complacency among, you know, conservatives and Republicans. Which is not a good thing, because, you know, the deep state, the elite, the left, the progressives, you know, whatever you want to call it, are going all out and spending, you know, tens of billions of dollars in order to ensure that Trump is not elected. I mean, we watched this whole Russian collusion thing unfold, you know, and all the fake news has been coming out. I mean, there's no ethics left. It's just like whatever they need to do, whatever the globalists need to do to get Trump out of the way so they can move forward with this, their ultimate plan here. So, you know, the ball's in our court. If we get active, if we vote, if we educate ourselves and find out what's really happening, you know, that's going to be a key determinant here. You know, I believe that God has given us extra time. You know, some people call this the reprieve that we're in right now, and so we're enjoying a time of prosperity. But the Bible also talks about that God will bring a time of prosperity right before the judgment comes. Essentially, he allows you to, you know, gain some wealth so that, you know, his believers, his people can, you know, help weather what the storm that's coming. So we don't know how soon all these things are going to unfold. And certainly if Trump does lose in 2020, I would expect, you know, just like I've interviewed some generals, I've interviewed some CIA guys, sort of, you know, conservatives, and they believe that the elite are going to, you know, just put us on a real fast track. I mean, they've already done everything they possibly can to set up international laws, install judges, you know, all kinds of, you know, the federal government's now full of like 90% of sort of deep state kind of operatives, or at least people that, you know, favor the, you know, liberal progressive wing. And so, you know, the Trump is fighting an uphill battle. It's sort of like a lone ranger out there with not a lot of, you know, support. And so, you know, that I think that's, you know, we're at a crucial moment in the history of America. You know, we're watching the forces of socialism and communism rising in this country. And, you know, if we don't get involved, if we don't get active, we very well could lose the country that our founding fathers, you know, came to America, you know, centuries ago to, you know, escape religious persecution in Europe. And, you know, God's used this country greatly. If America goes down, the entire world's going down with it. Mm. And I think everybody recognizes that. We have a great military power here. We have great economic strength. We have a lot of Christians here. But if we don't, you know, if the church doesn't wake up and do what needs to be done here and start, you know, alerting the people in the pews as to what's really happening, we very well could lose this country in the next 2 years.
That's interesting that you say that. A church step, because what I see in our churches today, it's that stay away from politics. Don't talk about politics. Don't mention anyone by name. You know, I don't know if that has anything to do with the amount of money that's coming into the churches or not. But why do you think that our churches are scared? Is it because of the 501c3 status that they could potentially lose for talking about this kind of stuff? Or is it just timidity? Or is it, what do you think about that?
This is a mysterious thing, you know. So the Barna Group has released these polls showing that, you know, about 80% of evangelical Christians believe we're living in the biblical end times. And another polling is, you know, found about the same thing. I think it's about 40% of Americans in general believe that, you know, Bible prophecy is being fulfilled. You know, so at the same time, you have these high percentages of people watching all this stuff unfold. You know, if you've read the Left Behind series, or you read Late Great Planet Earth, or any number of books or TV shows and movies, you've heard about this stuff over the years, and we're sort of watching it all happen now. And yet, you know, for most part, you know, I think we cite a survey in Trumpocalypse. It's something like, you know, 80 to 90% of the church is not talking about Bible prophecy. Like you're saying, they're avoiding politics, anything controversial. You know, the Barna Group did a survey, and pastor, like it was like 4 in 5 pastors just admitted that we don't want to talk about anything controversial because we don't want to, you know, jeopardize our donations, essentially. Is that all there is to this? Is there money flowing in from, you know, Soros or other groups that like that? Sounds like that could be part of what's going on here. Is there a lack of courage? in the book Revelation, my co-author Paul McGuire, he likes to talk about, I forget the exact verse now, but he talks about one of the greatest qualities that God wants in his people is courage and bravery. And that's what we need today. We need faith leaders who are going to be courageous and brave and willing to stand up for our country before we end up losing it here. And the first thing, I mean, we've got a gigantic uphill battle because, you know, we've got to educate people first about what's really happening and sort of, you know, bring them up to speed, you know, the kind of things that you're doing with your show. And then you know, motivate, inspire people to get active, to go out and vote and dedicate their life to spreading the gospel and doing what they can at this, you know, critical hour in our history. So I think there's a variety of factors that explain why the church is being silent. I mean, even the media, if you read the media, there's all kinds of stories, you know, talking about Bible prophecy and things like this. So even the secular media is talking about this stuff, and TV's got, you know, things on it, but the church is sort of eerily silent. And so it's a strange mystery to me, and definitely worth looking into more what exactly is going on there.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to me because Paul said in the last days there will be preachers who rise up that just want to tickle people's ears with what they want to hear. You know, you don't. I guess it's the average American. It's not the average American's desire to go to church and listen to a political rant or something. You know, and so it's just interesting to me that, you know, that survey says there's 80% of people who believe we're in the end times, but no one's willing to, it seems like, step out and share the gospel as much as it needs to be shared. I mean, you got the rise of transgenderism and, you know, the whole LGBT. I mean, people are searching spiritually. My show, I've interviewed, probably 10 people that have come out of the New Age, and the New Age is a huge, broad term. I mean, it encompasses a lot of different beliefs, and so people are searching for answers, and it's crazy to me that we go elsewhere, you know, even with the backgrounds that we have, and it's just part of fallen nature of man, I guess, to do that. But so my next question with you, kind of wrapping up here, in the next probably 10 minutes. There's prophecy written in the Bible, you know, the book of Revelation, you know, Ezekiel 38, 39, all the common ones. What's the next event in your opinion? What's going to kind of set the stage for a lot of these events to start just unraveling and in fast amount of time?
Yeah, what we talk about in Trumpocalypse is, you know, in order for the elite to ultimately accomplish this world system they want to bring online, there has to be some great crisis. You know, so could there, you know, right now we have record levels of debt. All nations of the world are in, you know, just trillions upon trillions of dollars of debt. I think it's like $1.5 quadrillion in global debt now. So we've got this gigantic, you know, house of cards that could collapse and you know, bring down the economies of the world with it. So that's a possibility. I mean, because the elite largely have control of our economic and banking systems, they can, you know, largely control these systems. So could that be something that, you know, is used to bring about this system? You crash the global economy, and then, you know, here's the solution. We're going to, you know, restore order and prosperity, but you're going to have to go along with this, you know, mark of the beast and this global system we're bringing online. Or could there be some kind of outbreak of war? I mean, you know, just last year, you know, we saw North Korea threaten us with nuclear attack. And, you know, we talk about that in Trumpocalypse. Is North Korea, could it be a tripwire for Russia and China, you know, sort of that, one of their proxies to, you know, create chaos in the world? Could North Korea or Iran, you know, we're watching, you know, all kinds of things going on in the Middle East now. And so could there be some kind of war that breaks out, even a limited nuclear war, that could bring about calls to, you know, get rid of nuclear weapons, address climate, extreme climate change, things like that. Some kind of great crisis, could be brought online purposely, or could just happen naturally, given all the, you know, instability in the world. But, you know, most likely it'll be something like that that'll you know, be the trigger that'll bring about this global system that the Bible talks about.
Yeah. So piggybacking off of that, if let's say Trump wins 2020 election, what do you think is going to be his biggest battle? If he does win, yeah. I mean, what do you think the elite's going to try to do if he does happen to win again?
Well, yeah, I mean, we saw the level of anger and frustration, you know, by the elite and by the left and by the media after Trump won the first time. So just imagine the level of frustration and anger that's going to ensue, you know, if he, you know, wins re-election in 2020. So, I mean, we could very well see, you know, violent, you know, protests and all kinds of crazy things going on in this country. You know, so that, I think that could be one aspect of it, that could, you know, create the, you know, the, you know, could create the incentive, you know, among the elite to bring about some kind of, you know, incredible crisis to try to, you know, remove him from power, you know, because obviously the devil's not going to be happy with, you know, Christians, you know, doing, you know, regaining power and starting to turn things around. And you know, Trump, and, you know, if he wins re-election, if, you know, Mike Pence or somebody else, you know, wins election in 2024, I mean, that gives, you know, essentially Republicans and Christians, you know, time to start to, you know, sort of right this ship. So, I mean, we haven't written off America. In fact, we actually have great hope. I interviewed Billy Graham several years ago, and he said two very interesting things. First, he said, signs of the end of the age are converging for the first time since Jesus made those predictions. So Billy Graham, you know, before he died, was convinced that this is all real. In fact, I interviewed over 150 people, from Billy Graham to all kinds of, you know, sort of like a who's who, major faith leaders, Bible scholars, and the overwhelming consensus is that we are in the run-up to these end-time events the Bible predicts, and even all kinds of secular experts. I interviewed Noam Chomsky and professors at, you know, Oxford and Princeton. They have all these existential risk institutes where they study, you know, the possible end of human civilization, and they believe we're in trouble. So there's consensus on both sides that, you know, the end of human history, you know, could be wrapping up here. But Billy Graham was actually very optimistic. He compared America to ancient Nineveh, and he said that when God sent the prophet Jonah to Nineveh to warn them of impending judgment, that the king and the people repented. And Billy Graham told me he believed the same thing could happen again in America, and that things could be turned around here. So, you know, America has a history of times of great crisis, you know, World War II, the American Revolution, the Civil War, where it seems like, you know, everything is about to be lost. And then, you know, Americans, they come to their senses, and they pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they do what needs to be done. And I believe that the same kind of thing can happen again. In fact, we've got a friend who's a minister, Reverend Kevin Jessup. He's actually working at the White House right now on a national and global day of repentance initiative. He's got the buy-in of hundreds of faith leaders, Mike Pence and Ben Carson. They're about to take a video to the president to try to persuade him to call for this. And the last president to call for a national day of repentance was Abraham Lincoln at the height of the Civil War. And after he called for this national day, I think they called it a fasting, prayer, and humiliation back then, Stonewall Jackson was shot by one of his own soldiers. The South lost the Battle of Gettysburg, and the North won. And, you know, the African-American slaves were freed, and America was saved. And most presidents from, you know, George Washington to Lincoln would call for these national days of repentance. But we haven't had one over a century and a half now. We're certainly long overdue. So that could be, you know, could be potentially, if it's done right, you know, could be a very good thing. You know, that's sort of the message of the whole Bible, is right. Repent and turn back to God. So we actually have great optimism and hope that America and Christians will do the right thing here.
Well, I that is encouraging to me, because I mean, and I think any Christian would be encouraged by that, because you look out at the world and it's just hard not to focus on the bad. It's hard not to focus on the worst things that are, you know, the news says is going to happen. I mean, it seems like there's an Ebola outbreak happening every other month, you know, and is that going to come and infect my children? And, you know, so there's just all these things going on, but we can take great hope in Jesus. And that's why his return is called the Blessed Hope. That's why we have something to look forward to as Christians. And And we shouldn't be scared or timid. Like, I love that Paul Maguire, he does reinforce that because, you know, Jesus tells us to be bold, to be courageous, to share our faith with people. And the Holy Spirit gives us words when we don't know what to say or how to act or respond. So I'm glad to hear that Billy Graham was optimistic. So that's good. So I think we could take something from that. But Troy, we've been going for an hour now, and I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate your wisdom that you've shared and your opinions. And it's for someone who's done a lot of research, this is really good to hear some of those things. So before we wrap up, do you have anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, just, you know, if you're, you know, if you've never accepted Jesus into your heart and you know, well, the first time you've ever heard something like this, I mean, Jesus says today is a day of salvation. So if you're feeling, you know, God sort of tugging on your heartstrings, I mean, to become a believer is very simple. You just ask the Lord to forgive you your sins, come into your heart, and then he'll renew and transform your entire life. You know, I'm an example of that. Seth is, and, We didn't make a mistake, so I would highly encourage you to give your life to the Lord and the amazing wonders that He has in store for you.
That's right, man. I couldn't end it any better than that. So call on the name of Jesus, and He wants a relationship with you. And Troy is absolutely right about that. But that wraps up today's episode. And so you guys know the saying: don't be lazy, do the research. We'll catch you guys next time. Thank you.